and welcome. I forgot to mention it last week, but they were sitting right behind me. The monthly planner for July is available. That's an astrological planner. You're welcome to that. I'd like to point out about that again. It's really, this does not reveal what are your best days. Because some of the goal days won't go so great for you, or will feel like they're not going so well. And some of the gray days will go splendidly well. So it's not how it works. It's really, these are the best days in general, according to where the planets are in the sky, for everybody. So if you have really important work that you need to do, or that you need to schedule something, you know, an important meeting, or you want to start a project, or you know, things like this, then your gold days, your silver days are really the best. Bronze days are average. It's like your average day. Not bad. It's not bad. It's the gray days that are somewhat troublesome and problematic. Buying a fridge, a car, a house on a gray day, don't do it, you know, because things don't work. They won't work out. Sooner or later, they'll create some problem. So that's how it works. And like I say, it is kind of a general thing, you know, for most people. Today's Tuesday, so on Sunday, Mercury moved in the sky into Gemini. Now, I don't have the thing in front of me. I should. I don't. So he'll be in Gemini for about 3 weeks or so. Mercury rules Gemini. When a planet is in its own sign, it's in a position to do much better. It'll give much greater benefit. Mercury is communication. Mercury is the messenger of the gods. Yeah? So it's a very, very favorable time for communication. When things need to be said, need to be spoken, and when we need to communicate effectively, so that when you say exactly what you want to say and the other person does not say, "What on earth are you talking about?" That's called ineffective communication. So when Mercury's in Gemini, we have a much better possibility of communicating very effectively. So that will take place for about the next 3 weeks. It's also a great time for a trip. It's Mercury's travel. On any other kind of intellectual pursuit, or anything to do with media, multimedia, along those lines. Then that was Sunday. Monday, yesterday, Venus moved into Cancer, which is normally a pretty good... how are you? Venus moved into Cancer, which is normally a pretty good position for Venus. Except that Rahu in the sky right now is with Venus. Rahu's there. K2, south node of the moon, is there along with Venus. Venus represents relationships, love, romance, those kinds of things. Be careful. Be careful with Venus and K2 together, because it sometimes can be problematic. So the best advice is, do not rush into an emotional circumstance. Do not rush headlong into emotional circumstances where your heart is being opened, or where you are being left vulnerable. So be careful in the next again, 3 to 4 weeks. What's the upside? The upside of Venus with K2 is that it is a yoga. Yoga means planetary combination for love at first sight. And people who have Venus and K2 together in the birth chart, all you have to say to them is this: did you ever have a love at first sight experience? Yeah. And they'll say yes. Maybe once, maybe more than once, where they'll just, you know, just meet somebody and instant connection, off they go. How does a love at first sight circumstance come about? Where they feel instantly comfortable, familiar, they recognize the person, and then they go through, okay, did I meet you here? Did I meet you there? Do I know you from? And then they figure out, no, don't know any of that. It's a stranger. Yet there's something that they can't put their finger on. Why does it seem as though I know you? Because more often than not, you do. You did know that soul in another lifetime. So it's two souls picking up where they left off. Now, not always easy to prove that, but there's, when you have a love at first, a legitimate love at first sight connection, there's a lot of the preliminary stuff that we do in relationships that you can skip. You don't need to do that. So you, instead of going from here to here, you go from here to there fairly quickly. Now, that sometimes can be a good thing and sometimes not such a good thing. So I said earlier, be careful. Be careful. Okay, so anyway, just proceed with caution. All right. Anybody have any experiences with mantras? We've been introducing various mantras that people I know have been chanting and utilizing. So does anybody want to share anything of note that would benefit us?
Just, can I say that?
Yes.
You see, like a Venus and K2 with a combination, so can we do the prayers with like the mantras, with Venus
sure.
mantras and
yeah.
the K2?
Sure.
The Vedic mantras.
Exactly. There are ways to get around it, and using the mantras, mantras do what? They neutralize negative effect. They overcome or overpower negative effect. Now, they'll definitely do that, but to what extent, that's always the unknown factor. So that's why we have to be a little bit careful just at this time. It's not so much, if you're already in relationship, it should be okay. But if you're about to begin, if you meet somebody from Monday, yesterday, until, and like I said, I don't have the date in front of me, but 3 or 4 weeks, within that time frame, and it is a beginning to your relationship, then you got to be careful with the Venus and K2 together. Yes, you can chant mantras to overcome possible negative effects.
But that depends on where they actually that planet is in the horoscope. What?
Yeah, see, this is only what we're talking about, that being in the sky right now. So I'm being very general. So we're not even looking at your horoscope, because your horoscope will give us far, far more detailed information of much greater perspective. So this is just general stuff, but okay. All right, so I want to talk a little bit today about, I have talked about karma, jnana, and bhakti before. So I want to present it perhaps in a little bit of a different perspective. Everybody works. Everybody acts. Everybody does something. Work, effort, action is called simply in Sanskrit, karma. That's literally what karma means. Work. And when you work, if you're an average person, not a spiritual person, material person, a materialist, then essentially you're working for self to fulfill desires, to satisfy your senses, to achieve certain objectives. That action will have a reaction. Whatever action you do has a subsequent reaction. Good actions produce good reactions. Bad actions produce bad reactions. And moderate produce moderate. Like that. So, most people are absorbed in acting for their own benefit, perhaps for the benefit of the family. So, which are what? Extensions of self. Family is extension of self. Ideally, the family is supposed to also satisfy your needs. Doesn't always work that way, but that's what it's supposed to do. So that's what people are busy doing largely. Now, one can also do karma yoga, but true karma yoga would mean acting for the satisfaction of God. Yoga means union or link with God. So you would do your actions or activities not simply for self, but for God. You'd offer them. So they would be like a sacrifice. You would make them sacred. A sacrifice means, from the Latin, sacer, sacred, and facere, to do or to make. Sacrifice means to make something sacred. To make the mundane sacred. And you can do this with pretty much any activity. So you do it for the satisfaction of God. Many people, the vast majority of people, they're not, well, I'm kind of going in three different levels here. On the karma level, this is engaging the body in the service of God or as an offering to God. Okay, so that's a very fundamental way. It can bring at some point in time moksha or liberation from the wheel of karma, repeated birth and death, samsara, repeated birth and death. Okay, so even actions can do that. Those people are called karmis. There's karma yoga, but there's also just the karma, just doing the work for self. And that, as I already said, that generates karmic reaction. That keeps you on the wheel of samsara, repeated birth and death. Because at the end of your life, whatever you think about, whatever your desires are, and whatever your work has been, your actions, will determine the body you will take in your next life. Right? You are not guaranteed a human body next life automatically. You can go up the evolutionary scale. You can go down. When you do a lot of good karma, good work on behalf of others, toward God, on behalf of others as well, you can go up to a much, much higher status or state of existence. This level we're on here, Earth, is part of what is called, according to yoga philosophy, the earthly planets or the middle planetary system. Yeah, well, you can pull out later. The middle planetary system. When you perform a lot of good work and you don't become liberated, in other words, you haven't quite wrapped it all up yet at the end of your life, you can take a higher birth as a deva, for example. What's a deva? A godly being. A higher being. You can go and live in what's called the heavenly world or heavenly planets. This is still the material world. It's not the spiritual world. It's the material world. And there, you can enjoy like there's no tomorrow. Oh yeah. You can enjoy your senses fully with no limitations. All of your senses. Fully. And how long can you hang up there in the heavenly realms with the angels, archangels, gods, goddesses, and other such divine beings? Until your good karma runs out. It's just like a bank account. You can use that laser card, that bank card, as much as you like. Until, oops, it didn't go through. Do you have another card?
And then they just push you off the cloud.
Yeah, they push you off the cloud. Down you come. So if you want that level of enjoyment, this is called heavenly enjoyment. Celestial enjoyment. And do we have any notion of what that's like on this plane? They call it orgasm, ladies and gentlemen. That is heavenly enjoyment. Yeah. It's not the only kind, but it's a good example. So you can enjoy yourself. You can eat as much as you like. You can drink what you want. Never get fat. Never get sick. Never get ill. Youthful. When you're in the heavenly planets, you do not generate further karma. There's no good karma or bad karma generated. Simply the results are experienced. And then you come back down. Now, on the other hand, supposing you didn't do a series of good acts and good deeds, then you can go down to the hellish worlds and hang out down there. It's less enjoyable. And you can suffer the effects of actions that you've done here. And how long will you be there? Until you've exhausted the negative karmic effect, the negative reactions. Yeah. You can also go from species to species. You can change species after, not during a lifetime, in between lifetimes. So there are, according to the Vedas, there are 8,400,000 species. That's a lot. And you can go up and down. This is what evolution is really about. Going up and down the evolutionary ladder. You're not encouraged to do so, but, you know, you can do that. That's kind of how it works in terms of people who are generating karma. Now, you may argue that it is preferable to do good works, good deeds, such as being charitable, being kind, compassionate, helpful, thoughtful toward others. And of course, we want to develop those qualities, no question. But the heavenly realms ultimately is not really our goal. because you're still not going to get out of here. You know, if you've got 2 weeks vacation and you can go to Mauritius, perhaps, or Tenerife, or Bali, great. And guess what happens 2 weeks from now? You're back. Same idea. Okay, so you can free yourself from the wheel of repeated birth and death through karma yoga, acting for the satisfaction of God. Some people do not want to engage their bodies. They want to engage their minds. So they're jnanis. And a jnani is, jnana means knowledge, somebody who cultivates knowledge and philosophical understanding is a jnani. And jnani also wants to become God or go into Brahman, into Brahman realization, and merge into Brahman realization in the sense that he is God. We look at that according to the Vedas. It says that that's the lowest state, God realization, Brahman. And there are three stages: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So a jnani will use his mind or her mind and cultivate God realization that way. But a bhakta will practice bhakti yoga, love and devotion. And at that stage, we open up our hearts and we develop a loving relationship with God, a loving reciprocation, a loving exchange. We've talked about this many times. If you meet somebody and you've never met them before, they say, "Can I get you a cup of tea?" "Yeah, sure, that'd be nice." Give you a comfortable seat, get you a cup of tea. "Can I make you something to eat?" "Yeah, I'm kind of hungry. Let me make you something to eat." And they do this for you, they do that, they do different things. Yeah. And you're very appreciative. You think, what a nice person this is. Yeah, I barely know this person. They're doing all these things for me. How nice. Karma yoga. Then they sit down and you have a talk. And you end up talking for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. Everything under the sun, and meeting of the minds. Boy, this is a great person. I'm so happy to have met this person. We have so much in common. They think like I do. We have so many interesting things to talk about. Now, which bond is stronger? The first one or the second one? The second one. Now we have a meeting of the minds. Right? You may say, the other time, this person's waiting on me doing all these things. Yeah, but that's not near as powerful as a meeting of the minds. You can go to a restaurant and somebody's going to wait on you, get you whatever you want. But there's no meeting of the minds necessarily. Not going to become your best friend. So once there's a meeting of the minds, that's the jnana yoga. Yeah. The wavelength. We're on the wavelength together. But then the person becomes a real loving, caring friend. And the heart opens. Now that could be intimate love. It could be love in friendship. It could be whatever kind of love. You know. It could be Kalindi with the dogs. That's love. then that's a whole other bond. It's a whole other level of exchange. Which one's the most powerful? Which one has the greatest impact? The love. Naturally. The bhakti. The love and devotion. So, that's a pretty clear example. Now, put God in that position. Which do you want? You can serve God. Or you can do what most Christians do. Dear God, please give me this, please give me that. I need one of these, I need two of those. And could you make it soon? Because otherwise... Amen. And you're going to do what for God? I asked them. That's what I did for him. I asked them. I didn't. What? He doesn't need anything from me. He's got everything he needs. Oh. Man proposes, God disposes. So. You want a relationship? Then you must relate. You must exchange. You must give something. Now, out of duty, that's nice. The karma yoga thing, give somebody a cup of tea, give them a nice seat, give them this, give them that. That's more out of duty. Being polite. Out of love, better. So, that's what we want to get to. If you want that in all of your relationships, and why wouldn't you? The more loving you can be, the better off you're going to be.
With the right person.
No. I just mean with people in general.
Yeah, with the right people.
Well, you know, like for example, I have taught my children to make friends with everybody. The postman, whomever, especially people they see regularly. Call them by name. Ask them how they're doing. Be warm, be friendly, and be genuine. Rather than just ignore the fact, you know, he's the postman. I mean, well, he's a person, you know. I think this is very important. Now, it's just a simple, neutral kind of relationship. If we have this with God, then we're taking it to the next level. If you just think of God as that scary guy with the beard up there someplace, not so attractive. So, yoga philosophy encourages you to develop love or a loving relationship with God, not fear. Nowhere in yoga philosophy in the Vedas that I've read for 30 years does it ever say you should enter into a relationship with in fear of God. Yet one of the common expressions in the Judeo-Christian world is he's got the God-fearing. He's got the fear of God in him. He's a good man. He fears God. Well, yeah, okay. Well, I don't want to know that God. You know, the God of from the Old Testament of hellfire and brimstone. Who's always pissed off about something or other, according to that tradition. You know. More interested in the guy who's running around in the forest with the flute and the cowards, maidens, dancing, singing. Okay, let's talk a little bit about so what we established: Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, relationship to God. Now let's talk a little bit about Shreyas and Prayas. Clindy requested we talk about this tonight. Shreyas and Prayas are two Sanskrit terms. Prayas means immediate satisfaction. I will do this for my immediate satisfaction, my immediate pleasure, my immediate need. Shreyas means my ultimate benefit. What is going to benefit me in the long run? What is going to be the best thing for me over time? So we all need various kinds of immediate satisfaction or immediate fulfillment, such as eating, such as sleeping, things like that. Well, whatever, different things. You might want an ice cream. That's prayas, immediate satisfaction. The concept here is to analyze your actions and what you plan to do in terms of what its benefit will be for you. Is it simply immediate, or is it working toward your ultimate benefit? So things that you do should ultimately center around your ultimate benefit. In the long run, what's the best thing that you can do? What's the best thing for the soul? So we have to look at then the difference between the body and the soul. If we act in body consciousness, that we're a body, and that's who I am. And then we think, yeah, okay, I'm Irish, I'm a woman, I do such and such for a living. So that's a conception. It's a conditioned reality. It's conditional. When you act in body consciousness, you typically act in terms of prayas for your immediate satisfaction. Because what you're doing is not necessarily for your ultimate benefit, for the soul's benefit. When you realize that you're not a body, or being a body is a temporary reality for you. I'm Spanish in this lifetime, but only in this lifetime. I'm related to these people now, not always. I'm a woman now, I'll be a man in a different lifetime. These things change. I'm this religion now, I'll be a different religion in another lifetime. The soul is transcendental to all these conceptions. And every body has a soul. Every human body and every plant body, every animal body, every insect body, every bird, they all have souls, or they wouldn't be animated and move around. So they're just different conceptions or notions. Just like we can go to a costume party, or as you call it here, a fancy dress party, and you can wear a costume. And you can be whatever you like. You can be Casper the Ghost. And you can act the part of your costume that you're wearing for the evening, and everybody will find it to be very entertaining and lots of fun, and, you know. But if you never take the costume off and you continue to act like the character represented by the costume, like even tomorrow you keep doing it, people will wonder, there's a problem here. You're still identifying with this false covering. So a body is more or less a costume. It lasts a little longer than one evening in a Halloween party or a fancy dress party. It lasts a lifetime, but it is nonetheless a costume. It is the walnut shell around the walnut. And it gets old, dilapidated, run down, in some cases diseased, worn out, and then it falls over one day, and it's done. That's what happens. and it's not that big a deal. It just wore out. So we're not this body. The identification, other than for practical purposes, should never be with the costume, with the body, with the religion, with the sex, with the nationality, etc. These things give different flavors and nuances and unique experiences to all of us. Great. But that's not who you are. So if you're acting for immediate satisfaction, then you're doing what the costume wants. If you're acting for your ultimate benefit, then you're doing what your soul needs. If you are a soul, then you must act like a soul and not under the limitation of a body. And bodies are largely, I don't want to insult here, well, they're largely ignorant. Not you, but the body. You know, it's produced of, it's dull matter, let's put it that way. At death, something goes away. What's missing? You can have the whole body. There it lies. If you want to look, all the organs are there. All the parts are there. But you go, Well, why? Because that spark, that life force, the thing that animated the body, the thing that you loved, that was inside that body, that was so attractive to you 5 minutes ago, perhaps, is gone. Went away. That's what you found attractive. Not the machine. Not the costume. Not the shell. So we have to realize that we're souls and behave like souls, or with that in mind. And that is Shreyas, ultimate benefit. At the time of death, according to Bhagavad Gita, whatever you remember, whatever you focus on at the time of death, will determine your next life, your next reality. If at the time of death you have one, only one material desire, what does material desire mean? Desire connected to matter. Matter. This earth, water, fire, air, and ether. One material desire. Guaranteed another body. You will get another material body. Why? To fulfill your desire. It's a good thing, right? You get another body. And if you have 10 desires, body can probably handle that. 20, 25 desires? Probably need another body after that. 150,000 desires? Well, we're talking a string of bodies. String of lifetimes. When's it end? When's it going to stop? No, there's no end. You get as many as you need. You can renew the coupon. Keep going, if you like. At the time of death, there can be no material desire, no desire connected to the body. The only desires can be that you can have are spiritual, connected to the soul, to the spirit. Those desires will not determine another material body for you. Your karma must be wrapped up. It must be cleared at death.
To
Attachment equals attachment equals bondage. That keeps you here. Anything that you're attached to here brings you back. Anything, anyone will bring you back. It's not to say that you can't love somebody. You can. But you can't be attached. In other words, when it's time to let go, you'll let go. You're willing to let go. Pardon?
That's hard.
It is hard. The other thing that happens, and people don't often realize this, the matriarch or the patriarch of the family that everybody loves dies. And they can't separate themselves from this person. Now he's dead and gone, or she's dead and gone. And they pull them back. They hold them back. Even though the body is cold, it's in the ground, that person goes, will they ever just
let me go?
You know?
Even if they have detached, if the person has detached?
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We can still pull them back?
Sure. Because your love is a force. Oh, don't leave me. And that person from the other side can go, oh, gee, I got to help this one still. You know, I can't go. I can't get on with it. I have to keep helping. How many times have you heard somebody say, oh, my dad's still around. He's helping me.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, that's good. I had a woman call me several years ago who lived in Vancouver. And she asked me to do a chart for her, and I said, yeah, fine. So we were doing the chart over the phone. I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and she was real concerned. She said, my life ever going to change? My life has been, I've been stuck for 2 years. Because my daughter has a terminal illness. And I've been looking after her here in the home. And her daughter was 17, 18. And she was supposed to die. And she had a very, very rare, rare illness. Like no one has this illness. And it's something to, I don't remember what it was, but it was spores on the lungs. Spores in the lungs. Very strange illness. And the doctors had come over the period of 2 years from time to time and said, that's it, now she's done, she's finished. She'll die by morning, you know, 24 hours, she'll be dead. Maybe two days, she'll be dead. And then the girl would revive. And then she'd get out of bed, she'd go into the kitchen, make popcorn. And this went on. And down back to death again, on the edge, come back, you know, Lazarus, raise yourself up. And she says, my life, it's just been looking after my daughter. You know, I love her, of course. And I said, I said, so when are you going to let her go? What do you mean? I said, when are you going to let her go? Oh, I'm not taking. I said, yeah, you are. She wants to go. She's suffering, and you're holding her back. I'm not holding. Yes, you are. It's your need for your life to have meaning, to look after your daughter, and for that reason, she can't go. How many times is she supposed to have been dead and she keeps getting up and making popcorn? And she got quiet and she listened. She was listening. I spent the entire hour on the phone talking about this to her. I said, and she'd say, she's like an angel. I said, yes, she is an angel. She's come here to teach you this one thing, to let go and stop being possessive in your love. Stop trying to say that you love her when actually what you're doing for her is you're doing for you more than for her. Because if you really cared about her, you put her suffering to an end because the girl was suffering. And you'd let her go. And she could die in peace and you'd get on with your life. That's what you do. So she's a real angel because she keeps hanging out for you. So then the hour went by and she said, aren't you going to tell me about what's going to happen in the next year or two? I said, no, I'm not. Well, aren't you supposed to do that when you have a reading? I said, yeah, you can. But I'm not going to for you. Because that has no meaning until you learn this lesson. It has no meaning. There is no next year there, because this is going to keep going on. I said, I'll be happy to talk to you about it when the time's right. 2 weeks later, she called me. Hi, Drew. Hi, Alan. How are you? Oh, I'm really, really sad and wonderfully happy at the same time. I said, oh, when did she die? She said, a couple of days ago. I said, well done. Well done. You let her go. How do you feel now? I feel wonderful. I have this sense of well-being and peace and relief. I said, great. So did you want to set up an appointment so we can talk about the coming time in your life?
My rates have gone up.
So that's what we did. So it was just she needed to hear what the reality was.
No one else would tell her, I bet.
Oh yeah, well I would tell her, but I told her only because it was the truth. Mm-hmm. Not because I was trying to influence the outcome. I wasn't.
She knew though. When you were saying it's like, did you
hear? Oh yeah, of course she did. And she didn't want to see it. Like, but see, this is a good woman. This is not a bad woman.
Yeah.
This is a woman with a good heart whose attachment was holding back her child, and her child was suffering in the meantime.
If somebody passes and you could even hold on to them, where are they exactly? They can't reincarnate, they can't.
Correct.
So they're just
in limbo. They're in limbo. You're holding them back. They're in limbo.
So how do they move on? Does everybody they love have to let them go?
Well, I can't claim to know all the ins and outs of all that.
I mean, I don't mean to be silly, but I'm just trying to think, gosh, like so many people have one person and they go, like, and if everybody's holding them back.
No, we're talking about reals. Possessive. See, this is we're talking more about a codependent type of love. I can't live without him. This kind of stuff, you know. I can't imagine my life without you. I couldn't go on. I'll snap out of it. There's no such thing. You can't go on. Of course you can go on. That's a phase. This is what happened in this part of your life. I can't go on. I have to go back to year 5 when things were so good. We're talking about year 5. You know? You're growing up now. Oh, yeah, right. You know, everything has its time. It has a beginning, it lasts for a while, and it comes to an end. That's all you got to know. And when it comes to an end, whatever it is, you let it go. whether it's your marriage, whether it's your job, whatever. Whatever phase of your life.
I think you do a friend or a family member far more good by letting them move on and still, you know, in your heart and in your mind, keeping a connection with them and hoping that, you know, they get to go to a way better place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well,
you really have the other person's best interests at heart, you will want the best for them, and you will not be self-interested to the extent of what about me, how could you leave me, how dare you go, and what's going to happen to me. That is all self-interest.
You can feel happy and hopeful that you know they could have scored and you know they're way better where they are now, you know. That's the way I like it.
Yeah. You know, usually, I mean, most people, when they tell you about their parents who are old and ill and are suffering, they say, oh, I just wish he'd go. I wish he'd go so that he would stop suffering. I don't like to see him like this. We love him. He's suffering. The sooner he goes, the better. You know, that's real love. Okay, questions, comments? Shall we go on to meditation? Okay, so we're going to do a little bit of meditation. Close your eyes. Breathe. Relax. And let go. Deeply, deeply relax. Breathe and let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body deeply, deeply relax, breathe, and let go. High above, envision a beautiful beam of a radiant pearl white light coming down, down from the heavens, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms, legs, out the bottom of your feet, and into the earth below. Breathe, relax. And let go. See and feel yourself by means of this light, connected to the heavens above and grounded in the earth below. Relax. And let go. All right. Clear your mind. I want you to see the sun up in the sky. And now you're traveling as you sit comfortably from the earth through the sky toward the sun. Closer and closer you come. It's safe. You're safe. All the way up to the sun and enter the sun planet. And feel the energy of the sun radiating within you and outside of you. Expand your energy throughout the universe, just like the sun. Feel your strength, your power, your beauty expanding out everywhere around you. Your self-confidence, your knowledge, your understanding, radiating like the sun everywhere. Your energy, your power, your success, your accomplishment, and your fulfillment shining in every direction for yourself, for others, the whole universe to appreciate. Feel your vitality, your health. Relax. Relax. Clear your mind. You're sitting peacefully outside, outdoors, on the grass. It's nighttime. The sky is filled with stars, twinkling, clear, bright, beautiful. And there is the full moon. Now, draw the full moon into yourself. With your will, pull it down toward you. Closer and closer. Until the moon enters your entire body and expands out around it. Become one with the energy of the moon. Feel its gentleness, peace, calm. Feel radiating out around you from your moon body, compassion, understanding, gentleness, nurturing, kindness, and love. Let your feminine nature shine. radiate this energy out around you for all. All the plants, the trees, the insects, the birds, the animals, the humans, everyone in the universe. Clear your mind. Breathe, relax, and let go. In your meditation, put your hands together in cupped. And now envision Mother Earth sitting in your hands, the size of a grapefruit. There's the Earth. She's in your hands. Who's going to look after her? Who's going to take care of her? Treat her with respect. Look after her well-being, her welfare. Sustain all of her gifts that she gives happily and freely. The earth is in your hands. She's relying on you. And on the earth are all the beings that live there. Sun. I am the moon. I am the earth. I am the sun. I am the moon. I am the earth. I am the sun. I am the moon. I am the earth. When you're ready, returning to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. When you're ready, open your eyes.